morning. Welcome to News Radio 1510 WLAC and the Conservative Law and Politics Show, where every week we discuss legal and political issues from a conservative perspective. I'm your host, Lee Dreyer, and this morning we have another installment in our Stories of Hope series. And today we're going to be discussing one man's escape from a life of poverty and potential deportation in communist China. As we discuss his amazing story, we'll find out how he used intelligence, the love of his family, and pure concentrated will to break out of a system that was bent on destroying his life and the life of many others. Now, many of you living in Nashville have probably heard of this gentleman. For those of you who haven't, and you've seen the movie God's Not Dead, our guest served as the inspiration for the character Martin Yip, a Chinese student in that movie, who found Christianity during his time in college. At the time I saw the movie, I knew of our guest, but I'd never met him. When I finally had the good fortune of running into this gentleman, I asked him about the movie, and he very modestly told me that his life was a bit more complex than the character in the movie, and as we're all about to find out, indeed it was. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest this morning has two doctorates. He has both a medical doctorate and a PhD in laser physics from Harvard and MIT. Many of you in Middle Tennessee are familiar with his medical practice, but I'm guessing that very few of us are familiar with the story of his teenage years and how he narrowly escaped deportation to a communist work camp. So without further ado, let me introduce this morning's guest, Dr. Ming Wang. Dr. Wang, welcome. We're very honored to have you in the show, sir. Okay. Dr. Wang, I want to start with the character in the movie, Martin Yip, played by an actor, Paul Kwan. Martin was from China, and as I mentioned in the intro, he found Christianity in college, as did you, but the similarities pretty much ended there. My impression from the movie was that Martin's character was from a well-to-do, influential Chinese family. But Dr. Wang, that wasn't exactly the background that you came from. So tell us, if you would, what your parents were doing for a living back in China during the late 60s and early 70s.
They're both in the medical fields. My mom was a teacher, instructor in the medical university. So her primary profession was as a teacher. And my father is a family practitioner, internal medicine specialist, practicing clinical medicine.
Okay. And starting in 1966, how old were you in 1966?
6 years old.
Okay. There was something going on in China that Westerners referred to as the Chinese Cultural Revolution, and its stated goal was to, quote, preserve true communist ideology. But sometime during the so-called Cultural Revolution, the government acted a policy towards young people who were in, I guess, junior and senior high school. Could you tell us about that policy, sir?
Yes, it was a period called Cultural Revolution, started in 1966 when the communist dictators in China decided that the best way to keep on dictating is to keep people ignorant. And the best way to keep people ignorant is to actually physically destroy the education of all the young people of entire nation. That means they shut down all universities and colleges.
All universities?
All universities and colleges, nearly, probably vast majority, nearly all, of entire country for 10 years. It started in 1966 and didn't end until 1976. And forcefully deported all the junior high, senior high graduates to the poorest part of the country and condemned each one of us a life sentence of hard labor and abject poverty. When I say abject poverty, that means you earn few dollars a month for the rest of your life. You would never be allowed to go back to the cities. You would never be able to be allowed to continue education.
And if you went back to the cities, if you escaped, it was what, prison, death?
Yes, you would be imprisoned or jailed or killed. They destroyed the future of 20 million young people during their 10 years of Cultural Revolution, 1966 to 1976, or should really be called Cultural Holocaust.
Mm. Now, you were a straight-A student at the time, right?
That's correct. Well, in 1974, I was 14 years old. I finished my junior high, ninth grade. I was looking forward to a 10th grade, 11th grade, senior high school when the deportation orders came down to my house.
So what were they thinking? You're going to take your best and brightest, and you're going to condemn them to slavery and no education. How can that possibly help your country? What were they thinking? Just power and not the future of China?
That's correct. Because the paramount leader, Mao, he himself was only had a 5-year school of education, elementary school education himself. So he hated anyone who had more education than him.
Ah, I see. Well, that makes a little bit of sense. Still lousy policy, but at least I can understand why he was thinking what he was thinking. All right. Now, your parents gave you some advice. They had an initial plan to keep you from getting deported. What was it?
1974, I was 14 years old. I would have been deported. And then the government enacted a policy said that if you have more than one kid in anyone's family, you get to choose one of your kid to be the chosen one, meaning that kid can be protected from deportation for a while, provided he or she can find a gainful employment. And it was really cruel policy, because how could any parents choose among all of their kids, just pick one to stay in the city while knowingly let the rest of the kids suffer and being deported? It was impossible. Yeah,
sell them into slavery, only no money for it.
Yeah, it was an impossible decision. But my parents, since my younger brother was 8 years younger, so they decided, you know, Ming, we'll choose you. So that means I narrowly escaped deportation, but I have to pay the price of not being able to continue my education into the 10th, 11th, 12th. So my education was cut off at right after 9th grade, junior high, and despite the fact that I was a straight-A student, I had zero chance to go to 10th grade, 11th, 12th, or zero chance for college.
Okay. So somehow your parents also advised you to play music or become a musician. Tell us about that.
So now I was temporarily protected. Then I have to find a gainful employment within a short period of time. Otherwise, government will deport me again. And it turns out that if you can play a music instrument, if you can dance, you can get into the communist song and dance troupe.
Okay.
And if you could get into...
And this was for the purpose of what? Communist propaganda?
Communist propaganda, yes. Okay. And those dance troupes, you know, song dance troupes, you know, give their performance in the cities throughout the country. So if you can get into communist song dance troupe, play a music instrument or dance, you might be able to be exempted from this devastating fate of deportation and life sentence. So that's how I started playing this Chinese violin.
Now, the Chinese violin, describe that for us. It's a very unusual instrument. You showed me a picture of it this evening.
Yes. It's a vertical instrument with a pole, and you hold it upright, and two strings. The bow sits in between the two strings. And at the bottom, there's a sound box covered with a snake skin. So it generates this beautiful, soulful, a bit of melancholy sound. And the bow sits in between the two strings. So it can only strike one string at any one time. So by definition, it cannot produce harmony. Harmony requires at least two notes. So I picked up this instrument. And I asked my dad, I said, why should I be playing? He said, the only way to avoid deportation now is to get into this communist song and dance troupe. So I played the instrument every day. I remember in the winter times, it was so cold outside. I had to play outside the building because I don't want to disturb the neighbors while they were sleeping. I would get up at 5, 6 in the morning and stand outside playing the instrument until my hands all got frozen, frostbite, and all wounded and bleeding. But I had to play. I was playing 15, 16 hours a day trying to get into communist song dance troupe. I was improving and I really got a shot at the communist song dance troupe performing group. Then the government discovered that many youngsters like me throughout the whole country in China in mid-1970s were all learning some sort of music instrument. Some the students were playing violin. Me case was Chinese violin, erhu, and there are students who were playing piano, but all to avoid deportation.
Okay, we've got about a minute. That didn't work out. The Chinese government got wise to the system. They decided to start deporting musicians. What was plan B for your parents? What did they advise you to do next?
Plan B is trying to dance, because song and dance troupe, if I could learn dance, I could still get into communist song and dance troupe. And that was discovered by the government, and it was stopped also.
Okay. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think we're going to have to go to break there. But when we come back, we're going to talk about how Dr. Wang actually started in medical school before he ever went to high school. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Lee Dreyer, and you've been listening to the Conservative Law and Politics Show on News Radio 1510 WLAC. Ladies and gentlemen, gentlemen, welcome back to the Conservative Law and Politics Show on News Radio 1510 WLAC. I'm your host, Lee Dreyer, and we're here talking about one man's escape from deportation in Red China. Now, ladies and gentlemen, before we get back to our guest, I'd like to mention that this show is the exclusive production of the Conservative Law and Politics Media Group, who is solely responsible for its content. The assertions and opinions expressed on the show are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WLAC or iHeartMedia. And while we're on that subject, for those of you having questions about the show, you want to suggest show topics, or you've got some sort of a comment, or you're having a legal problem and you need some free, once again, free legal advice, or perhaps you'd like to advertise on the show, please go to my website, www.leedreyerlaw.com, hit the Contact Us button, and send us an email. You can also call us at area code 615-576-0755, or you can mail us directly in care of the Conservative Law and Politics Show, 426 Century Court, Franklin, Tennessee, 37064. Either way, you contact us, we will respond, or I will respond. Somebody will respond. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, back to our guest, Dr. Ming Wang. Dr. Wang, we left off, we talked about how you learned to dance, and you learned to dance in hopes of avoiding deportation, but that didn't work either. The communist government decided that that wasn't going to be good enough. They were going to deport somebody else. And so your parents came up with a third plan. Tell us about that.
Yeah, just a comment about the dance and music instrument playing to avoid deportation. I learned, you know, in these days in America, very often friends will come and talk to me and say, "Oh, Ming, so nice, you have a hobby, you can play an instrument. Nice to have these hobbies, you can dance." You know what I say? I say, you know, I didn't learn these as hobbies. I learned to survive. Mm. So that helped put into perspective. And so my parents tried, these didn't work, so then they found out that if they smuggle me into the medical school, their medical school, which was one of the few, was still open, that I might be able to at least learn the medical knowledge with, even though with zero chance of becoming a medical doctor, but at least I could hide away in the medical school so the government wouldn't find me, you know, idling on the street and deport me. So at age about 15 and a half or so, I started studying medicine, but the remarkable thing was, I studied as a illegal student. I was not enrolled in medical school, and I was not allowed to. I was not allowed to enroll in medical school, and I was studying medicine with zero chance to become a doctor. I remember asking my dad. I said, "Why should I be studying?" And I remember to this day what he told me. He said, "Well, Ming, just remember, knowledge will always be good. Knowledge might be one day useful."
And come to find out it was. My question is, you live basically in a police state, right? How did they manage to keep the government from finding out that you were there? They didn't forever, but for a while they did. How did that work?
It was my parents basically bribed all the fellow professors in the university and said, our 15-year-old son will be showing up in school. He was not registered, but can you look in the other way? So these group of professors and protected me and allowed me to illegally sit in these medical school classes. So my medical knowledge was improving gradually. As I gradually got into medicine, I thought, wow, maybe, you know, medicine's interesting about human body. So I began to dream maybe one day I would maybe allowed to become a doctor one day in China. Then one day my father came home, told me the bad news. This was almost a year into this illegal medical study. He said, "Ming, school just found out you were auditing. You're an illegal student, and they're going to expel you. Otherwise, they will get, kick me out of my job as a family practitioner in the medical school." So I was expelled from a medical school that I was not even enrolled. And I lost the chance to even study medicine, even for only the knowledge sake.
Okay. Now, at this point, you've had the A plan, the B plan, and the C plan. None of them worked. You're facing deportation. You're what, 16 and a half years old? Mm-hmm. How did that make you feel?
It was unspeakable. It was basically you felt your life was there's no hope, no ending. Because as a junior high graduate, the only job I could find, it was like a janitorial, you know, job in a, with very basic earning, and I would not be allowed to go to high school or college, and I would not be able to have can afford a family, and I also studied very hard. I have never got a B. But despite that, that didn't make any difference, that I was in the wrong system, that the government's priority was its power balance, the power, controlling power, rather than the well-being of its people or the country.
Mm. Well, just at the last minute, before you got deported, there was some good news. Tell us about that.
1976, 10 years into Cultural Revolution, the dictator died in China, and he died.
Mao Zedong.
Mao Zedong, yeah, and he died.
And he was replaced by Deng Xiaoping, correct?
Yes, who was more pragmatic and open-minded leader. So Cultural Revolution, or Cultural Holocaust, finally ended in 1976. And then all of a sudden China woke up realizing what a tragic mistake it has made upon itself by having destroyed the future of 20 million young people over a 10-year period.
Okay, so the government reopened the colleges mm-hmm. back in 1976, 77,
right.
And they decided to give a national entrance exam for college.
Right.
Now, what percentage of the people taking that exam were actually going to get into college?
Probably a few percent, 2 or 3%, because there had been a 10-year backlog of students. Those students who graduated between 1966 to 1976, they were all deported. So now they were all coming back in 1976 to apply for college. So in 1976, there were 10 times more applicants. 1976 was the single most difficult year to get into China's colleges in modern China history.
Okay, now, your parents wanted you to take the exam, but you'd never been to high school. You'd had essentially a year of medical school, which I guess some of that might have been on the entrance exam. I don't know, but probably not very much. Why did your parents insist that you take the exam then? Why not wait a year or two?
Yes, my choice is that, you know, I was a ninth grade dropout. I was forced to drop out and almost 2.5, nearly 3 years prior. So one choice is to go back to ninth and 10th, 11th, 12th and participate in the college entrance exam 3 years from then. But my parents did not want that. They want me to go back to college right away and jump 3 years ahead overnight
Why?
Try to get into top 2 or 3%. Yes, I asked my parents why. My father said, how long did the communist government shut down universities? I said, 10 years. He said, now they reopened, but is there any guarantee they will not shut down for another 10 years next year? I said, yeah, I guess there's no guarantee. It's a dictatorship, no freedom. He said, you got my point. Try to get in college now, or you may never be able to.
Okay, so you had 2 months, 2-3 months to prepare mm-hmm. for the entrance exam.
Right.
And you had to basically learn 2 or 3 years material in 2 or 3 months.
Right, and try to get into top few percent of the 12th grader graduating class. Yeah.
How did you do that? What happened? What did your parents do to help?
My father, as I said, is a family practitioner. So he basically talked to a bunch of teachers from high school, you know, math teacher, chemistry teacher, physics teacher. Hey, listen, if you would come to my house to tutor my 16, 17-year-old son in a very, very cramped, expedited course, and in 2 months getting covered 3 years of material and trying to get him into top few percent of the graduating class, I will provide the free medical care for your family and for you and for life. So that was the deal. So he basically got the exchange services and got these teachers all show up at my parents' house and crammed me and just like drilled me study for
did you ever feel
months.
Like just giving up? Just like, enough, I quit.
No, I would not want to give up at all, because in what I knew what was on the line, if I did not push myself, then my alternative was to go back to that devastating fate of being subjected possible to deportation or have just basic level job only with a junior high degree. So the alternative was horrible, but I also knew that it was like it was basically like fighting with your back on the edge of the cliff. If you step halfway, step back, you fall into the valley. Okay. So you have to fight with dear life, no retreat.
Well, I think that's probably a good place to take our next break. Ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, we're going to talk about how Dr. Wang managed to actually trek to the U.S. and become a U.S. citizen. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Lee Dreyer, and you've been listening to the Conservative Law and Politics Show on News Radio 1510 WLAC. Welcome back to the Conservative Law and Politics Show on News Radio 1510 WLAC. I'm your host, Lee Dreyer, and this morning's topic is one man's escape from a labor camp in Red China, or a potential labor camp. Before we get back to our guest, however, I'd like to once again mention that the show is the exclusive production of the Conservative Law and Politics Media Group, who is solely responsible for its content. The assertions and opinions expressed in the show are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WLAC or iHeartMedia. Dr. Wang, you managed to come to the U.S. Tell us the story about how you got there, or got here, I guess.
Yes, I barely got into college in China, but I did not want to have anything to do with the dictators anymore. I have suffered enough as a teenager. Can you imagine, from age 14 onwards, I lost all hope for education, was cut off playing all instrument and dance, all to avoid deportation, life sentence. Now I finally got into college. I just want to leave. I just wanted to come to a free country. I met a visiting American professor who lended me $50, and I got the opportunity to be permitted by the government. So in 1982...
Now, wait a second. You got this professor's attention. I want to talk about that for a second. How'd you get his attention?
Well,
you're being too modest.
Yes. He came to our university to give a lecture. I knew that was my only chance to come to America. I've got to impress him. So the night before his lecture, I pulled out a textbook and studied very hard. I was going to impress him. And next morning, he gave a lecture to several hundred students. And afterwards, he said, any questions? And all the Chinese students were very quiet, but my hand was very high. He said, okay, yes. And I stood up and I asked him the question straight out of the textbook that I pulled out to study the night before. But to my horror, that he did not understand the question. And I realized that the English textbook that I happened to pull out to study, so that I can ask him a question to impress him, was a British English textbook, not an American one. So the way the question was phrased was, it must be British one. Actually, I remember the question. The question was, what's the academic load of your school? And he started asking me questions. He said, what is the academic load? What exactly does it mean? So I have no idea what he was saying. I only prepared to ask a question. I did not prepare how to listen to possible answers. So I stood there, kept on just asking.
Just asking the same question.
Over and over, 7, 8, 9 times, and finally, he somehow figured out the question. He said, oh, you mean how many credits and students need to get to graduate with a doctorate degree in graduate school, academic load. So he explained that, answered my question. I didn't really quite understand all what he's saying, but I did ask him a question. And I guess I impressed him, not so much for my English, more lack of, but by my persistence and tenaciousness, and just did not want to give up. So before he walked off the podium, he goes, that kid, I want to see him in America.
Ah, your big break, huh? So yes. So you borrowed money from your family. You got a one-way plane ticket. You came here with what? How much in your pocket?
$50.
And what else did you have?
English-Chinese dictionary.
So your English is very good now, but I'm assuming that you picked up most of your English while you were here, right?
That's right, yes. And knowing no one in this country, but with a big American dream in my heart.
Ah, yes, the big American dream. Okay. All right, so let me ask you this. What was it about the United States? What did you heard? What did you think that made you want to come here?
It was very interesting. There were two stages. The first stage was when I was younger and during Cultural Revolution itself. America was painted as a horrible country, and communist government showed those photos of American people living in poverty, and street was dirty, and it just very bad. And so that was what we brainwashed as what America was. Then after 1976, when I was in college, I started to watch some American Hollywood movies. I remember the first movie I watched was The Future World, and then Star Wars. And then I realized, America was exactly opposite of what I was being brainwashed. It was not a horrible place of poverty and nobody's happy. It's a modern country with happy people and amazing technology. So,
and what else? I've heard you say this word a lot, freedom.
Yeah, yes, and people are free and to pursue their dreams. So I began to really wanted to come to America. I studied English very hard and knew that to escape permanently from the deportation and life sentence and communist dictatorship is to come to a free country. So that's how in 1982 I was dropped at National Airport, Washington, D.C. with that $50, but with a big American dream.
Now, how do you think you look at freedom coming from the country that you did, coming from a police state, communist red China? How do you think you look at it differently than someone who's born in America and it's used to the freedom, it's accustomed to it?
I look at freedom very, very differently. It's like, you know, who appreciates sight the most, those who are blind. Who appreciate freedom the most, those who used to not have freedom. So I appreciate freedom in my view much, much more than folks here who are born with freedom. And there are many things happening in our country that today in America that are taking our freedom away. Freedom of speech, freedom of belief, to believe, freedom to declare your belief, and freedom to be safe in public places. And so I feel that sometimes it's, you know, as a human being, that we don't appreciate something when we have it. We only begin to appreciate it when we lose it, no longer have it. So I think America, I guess my Cultural Revolution story, the point to, you know, relevance to our country today here in America is we need to truly treasure our freedom here in America. We need to protect, stand up and protect it.
Yes.
Can we protect it while we still have it?
Yes.
Before we have to lose it.
Yes, agreed. All right, now, at some point in college, you were, I guess, introduced to Christianity. Could you tell us about that?
Yes, I was studying biology, and I was very interested in eyes because I had some physics background. I eventually got a PhD in laser physics and then medical degree from Harvard. And so I was studying structural human eyes and found that the eyes are so complex that the number of cells involved in vision interpretation in one person's head is greater than the number of stars that we have ever discovered in the entire universe. So I started calculating what are the chances for all these cells to form out of random, without purpose, without design, to form as a structure as complex as human eye. The chance is nearly zero. In fact, it would have probably taken trillions or trillions or trillions of years rather than the 13 billion years that the universe has been purported to have existed. So my atheistic approach to life, my scientific background, my viewpoint that science was everything.
Now you were raised an atheist. Yeah. That was what it was in communist China.
Yes, that the atheist family, we did not believe in God, we believe only in education. But this, ironically, even though we did believe in education during Cultural Revolution, even that education was taken away from me. So back in the United States, I was studying science and biology and medicine, and I realized that there's something else that beyond science, it is something that has been missing in my life. And right around the time I met a professor who showed me the way, he took me out. He
Where
saw,
is this professor from? What school?
He was, I did an off-site rotation. It was a part of the Harvard, you know, rotation, clinical rotation program.
They let Christians in Ivy League schools.
Yes, yeah. And fewer than some other schools, yes. But he basically took me, he saw how much crisis I was in, and a gung-ho atheist Chinese student from mainland China who survived communism and came to this country to only study science. But then found myself in trouble because I could not answer many of the fundamental questions about life from science alone. So he took me out for lunch one day and he showed me, he said, what's across the street? I said, that's a car. He said, what's the difference between car and human brain? I said, human brain is a lot more complicated. He said, okay. Can you imagine a pile of random pieces of metal assemble itself into a car? I said, no, no way. He said, how about human brain? So right then, he opened a window in my life, and he basically said, you know, there's something more deeper and broader scale than science alone. And he gave me a Bible. That was my first Bible. I started reading, and I realized that the reason that the eye is a structure, such a complicated structure such as human eye, could form in such a short period of time is because it did not form out of random. It was actually built with a specific purpose for vision. So it was designed. It was God's purpose designed the human organ, in this case, eye, for vision interpretation. So I realized that life is has two sides. It's got science and the faith. And they are the two sides of the same coin. Science is about what things are. Faith is about why things are.
Yeah, I've heard you say that. Could you explain that a little bit to us?
That means when we study science, we look at the structure. We look at how one molecule is how connected to the other. But then the functionality, how the integrated the functioning of different parts of the system that require some understanding and the purpose integrated design. And that's where faith comes in.
Okay. And the faith is why? A design.
Yes, a design, and that means a creator. In my case, it's Jesus Christ, a Christian faith that he created the world and things set in motion with a specific goal for our lives. And we still have control. We still have chance to make mistake or screw our lives up. But it was God who set in motion our lives.
Okay. Well, I think that's a good place to go to break. Ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about more about the relationship between faith and science, according to Dr. Wang. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Lee Dreyer, and you've been listening to the Conservative Law and Politics Show on News Radio 1510 WLAC. Welcome back to the Conservative Law and Politics Show on News Radio 1510 WLAC. I'm your host, Lee Dreyer, and we're here talking about one man's escape from China. We're here with Dr. Ming Wang. However, before we get back to our guest, I'd like to once again mention that this show is the exclusive production of the Conservative Law and Politics Media Group, who is solely responsible for its content. The assertions and opinions expressed on the show are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WLAC or iHeartMedia. Dr. Wang, welcome back. I want to talk to you more about this relationship between, in your view, science and faith. There was a very, very controversial issue that came up, I think, largely during the George W. Bush administration about stem cell research. And you yourself have been very honest about your ethical conflict when it comes to stem cell research. Could you tell us about that?
Yes. We're living in a technologically driven world today. Science and technology have been developing with unrelenting pace that have fundamentally transformed the way we live. We use iPhone, iPad. We no longer live the way we used to. But with the rapid rise of technology, improvement in technology, it invariably started conflicts with our moral, ethical, faith principles. And stem cell and fetal tissue research are one powerful example. On one hand, we do need to use these young tissues, stem cells, the cells with a tremendous potential for growth and healing, and the fetal cells, the fetal tissue from fetus, that to help adult injuries and treatment of diseases, especially elderly disease such as macular degeneration, Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, that medicine has shown that to treat this elderly disease, the aging conditions, one has to use young tissue, fetal tissue, stem cells. But on the other hand, I have always had trouble, especially I'm a Christian, that to know that we have to hurt a baby, hurt a fetus in order to benefit an adult. So where is this solution? I mean, are science and faith enemies and they cannot work together? Or what's God's purpose? I could not believe that God does not want us to improve the quality of lives. He loves us. He wants us to improve the quality of lives, and our quality of lives are improved through research. So fortunately, I did not give up. I studied the human eye healing after trauma, and I knew I would like to use fetal tissue, but I did not want to touch any part of the baby. Fortunately, I did not give up. Over the course of really 20 years of work, we bump into the placenta, the amniotic membrane, the sac that from which each of us comes out of. And I started doing some research experiment, maybe thinking that the placenta come from the mother after giving birth to a child, the placenta is always discarded. And I got this placenta donated to me, and I started working in the laboratory and tease out this amniotic membrane, the amniotic sac, used to surround the baby, conferring the youthful healing property. And I said, maybe I can transplant onto human eye after injury to see whether it can reactivate the fetal youth scarless wound healing property of an adult body. And we did a bunch of experiments, and we found that's amazing that we put those membranes, recreate a fetus-like environment. We can actually reactivate the regenerative scarless fetal-like wound healing property of the adult body. And the best part is that we're using the membrane, the amniotic membrane from placenta, which has the fetal youthful wound healing property, but at the same time, it's not technically part of the baby. It was connected to the baby like a blanket. So we will not have any moral ethical issues of using the placenta or amniotic membrane. So I think, you know, we actually published the first paper in scientific literature demonstrating the youthful healing property of amniotic membrane transplantation, and we got 2 U.S. patents. But to me, the most gratifying aspect is not just the science and technology, the ability to be able to now help blind patients use the youthful healing of a fetal membrane come from the placenta, not the baby himself, but placenta. But for me, it's a validation that it is possible to pursue science to improve the quality of lives without compromising our moral ethical principles.
Mm. Now, I wanted to ask you this, and you may not know the answer. You're an eye surgeon. Does this have other applications for people with diabetes and people with Alzheimer's?
Absolutely, absolutely. The entire field of stem cell that is promising to really change, fundamentally change the way we treat many of the major human diseases such as diabetes, Alzheimer's. And of course, the people say, well, you got to use embryonic stem cells. No, I've been working on adult stem cells for 25 years. And those with the stem cell donated by adults who have died and donated their eyeballs to us. And we harvest the adult stem cells from donated eyeball after people after they died. And then in the laboratory, reactivate some of the stemness or the youthful healing property from those stem cells and transplanting those adult stem cells onto human eye to achieve certain degree of youthful wound healing. So stem cell doesn't mean that it has to come from the embryo. It can come from adult. And I think the best way to pursue the research is continue push stem cell research, but focus on adult stem cells that donated by people who have died rather than touching the embryonic stem cells, which indeed you're affecting a life.
Mm. Now, I want to talk about one particular amazing story. There was a gentleman who, I guess, suffered from an industrial accident and had molten lead sprayed in his eyes.
Yes.
And 15, 20 years ago, that man would have been blind for life.
Yeah, he was injured at age like 29, almost 30, I believe. And he suffered a 1,500-degree molten aluminum injury, blinded both eyes. And he then underwent a series of surgeries in all major medical centers throughout the country. And after 13 years of surgeries, and finally he was declared to be basically irreversibly blind. Interestingly, his name is Brad, and he actually got married in the meantime. So he ended up marrying a lady, a beautiful young lady whom he had never seen. So 4 years into their marriage, that was 13 years into his blindness, his doctor from St. Louis, Washington, found out about what we've been doing, the fetal stem cell and amniotic, so referred Brad to us. And we did a series of innovative surgeries. And eventually, with God's blessing, we restored Brad's sight, and he saw his wife for the very first time.
All right, we've got about a minute left. That's an amazing story. You've got 2 charitable foundations. Tell us about that, and tell us about how people can donate to them.
We have 1 foundation for Christian outreach to China with our China Bible Project and help people pen pal one-on-one with a budding Christian over there who receive one of our Bibles to nurture and fellowship. And the other foundation is Wang Foundation for Sight Restoration, which we gather together, a group of eye doctors, donate eye surgeries free of charge. Today, we have foundation have helped patients from over 40 states and 55 countries with all sight restoration surgeries performed free of charge. And the way to help is we're looking for host families, so our foundation can help more blind orphan children. We're looking for placentas that donated by mother after giving birth to a children. And the foundation's address is www.wangfoundation.com.
That's wonderful. Well, we're going to have to wrap things up there. My thanks to this week's guest, Dr. Ming Wang, and as always, to my producer, Reuben Hunter. Ruben hosts his own show called the Surround Sound Podcast, and you can catch it on YouTube. Ladies and gentlemen, as I've said before, one of the best things about doing this show is getting to interview inspirational people like Dr. Ming Wang. You see, as a teenager, this very bright young man with a family who loved and supported him didn't want to go to some communist labor camp on the other side of China. No, what he wanted was freedom. And the more educated he became, the more freedom he wanted. He yearned for freedom so much that he wanted to live in the land of the free. That exceptional place that people in foreign countries dream about coming to is the United States of America. And I guess that's the biggest reason I do this show every week. I want to play whatever small part I can in keeping this country the place that teenagers in other countries dream about coming to. I always want it to remain that shining city on the hill that Ronald Reagan so vividly described when he was our president. So thanks for listening this morning, and please remember this one thing. If we want to keep this country free, the price of that freedom is, once again, eternal vigilance. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Lee Dreyer, and you've been listening to the Conservative Law and Politics Show on News Radio 1510 WLAC. Have a great weekend.